What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Heard you, Jay Rose, and I fixed it. It is the Indeed Podcast. Black History Month, the last show of the month. Again, our friend Jay Rose is here. Thank you for joining us. And you guys, I couldn't think of a better way to end this month than to have a legendary independent wrestler, legendary pro wrestler join us. When I set out to do this month of podcast, I had kind of an idea of what I wanted to do was roundtables and you know, paying tribute to Black independent wrestling. And I was like, having like a legend at the end of this would be so perfect. And somehow we are here today joining us, very special guest, first ever Black CZW champion, independent wrestling Hall of Famer, the king of flipping and spinning. It is Ruckus himself. Ruckus, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming, man.
Yeah. It's like, this is just legendary. And we just are here pretty much to show appreciation to you. So yeah, I told a little bit of story on Twitter. So when I discovered this form of independent wrestling, the independent wrestling that I love the most, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I somehow got a pack of CZW videos, and they were just short highlight videos, 2 to 3 minutes, and Red and Brian XL blew my mind. I was like, I don't know what I'm watching here. But there was another video with the guy that was doing the wildest things I ever did. He was doing moonsaults. He was doing 450 splashes. He was doing all the shit you ever see. But he looked like me. So I was like, well, what is this? What am I seeing? And that guy was Ruckus. That day I saw Ruckus, like, my life changed. I was like, I was a backyard wrestler at the time. And you had your backyard wrestling roots. So, like, just seeing you and knowing all that, it, like, hit so hard. And to know that happened in 2002, 2001, and for you to join us here today. Again, I just want to say thank you. I think I want to start out by, of course, how did you transition from backyard wrestling into CZW? Because I think that kind of thing is, it's not, backyard wrestling is a lost art form these days. And you were one of the prime examples of it being a success story.
Yeah. Well, I was doing backyard wrestling with a bunch of friends of mine in Maryland. We had a fad called Hardcore Championship Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And we would often trade tapes with Sanjay Dutt. He's another good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Now, in my backyard fad, we had, like, Hurricane Kid, Philip Stamper. He's a name on the indies.
Shout out to the president. Shout out to Phil Stamper.
Yeah, me and Phil have been friends since I've been, like, 16 years old.
Wow.
So we've been wrestling with each other for a while. But when backyard wrestling got banned in Maryland, me and Hurricane Kid decided we were going to go pro. So I ended up going to a wrestling school in Maryland called Brain Busters. It was ran by a dude named Tim Burke and Dennis Wentreich. And I was trained by Bob Starr, Chad Austin, Axel Rotten, Gilbert, amongst others. And the CZW thing was a funny story. Like, I was only wrestling about a year and a half at that point. And we were doing ring rentals for CZW. Like, when you first get in the business, you're not really on shows.
Right.
So you got to be like a ring boy. So me and Hurricane Kid would travel up to New Jersey with this ring for CZW. And the first time I saw it, I'm thinking to myself, this is the craziest shit I've ever seen in my life. And I remember being at Cage of Death 2, and I'm watching Lobo and Justice Payne, and I'm watching them blow each other up and all types of shit. And I'm like, this is nuts. But then I saw a bunch of cruiserweights like Trent Acid, Nick Burke, Nick Mondo, and they're out there hitting all types of cool shit. So I'm just like, I need to be a part of this. You know what I mean? And by luck, me and Hurricane Kid were at a show in Jersey for a place called Powerhouse Wrestling. And funny enough, I was wrestling Joker and Sabian, or Geez, like before we even knew each other.
Wow.
And it was a four-way. It was me, Geez, Joker, and Hurricane Kid. And it just so happened that Dewey Donovan, Zandig, and a few other CZW dudes were at the show talking to the promoter about something, and they just happened to look at the match. And I say maybe 2 weeks later, I got a call from Zandig to come to Delaware, and it was just history from there, you know what I mean?
For sure.
That's crazy. That's like happenstance, just being in the right place at the right time. How were you guys a part of the banning of backyard wrestling? Did like was did you guys play a part in that happening?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, we had all types of people coming at us in Maryland for doing it, and it wasn't just us. It was pretty much every backyard fed in Maryland got taken down. So
gotcha.
Yeah. Do you remember what specifically the last straw was for them to be like, actually, yeah, wrap this up? Do you remember what it was? Or yeah, is it like a combination of things?
It was pretty much a combination of things. And a lot of the feds were like selling tickets to the backyard shows and stuff. They would come up with any reason to just pretty much shut you down just because they didn't want you having fun. So
BS. Backyard wrestling, probably the people in the neighborhoods, all kind of stuff kind of played a role in it, I'm sure. Yeah, I think when I originally had discovered you, you were kind of locked in to, you mentioned him, Trent Acid. Like, I became a big fan of Trent Acid through his matches with you in CZW. Talk to us about your relationship with Trent Acid and what those matches did for your career.
Oh, they did everything for my career. Like, I wasn't even supposed to wrestle Trent Acid the first time we wrestled. The guy I was supposed to wrestle dropped out. And the guy I was supposed to wrestle just didn't show up. So they just matched us up together at spare the moment that day. And at this point, we just talked to each other in passing. Like, so we went to work stuff out. And me, I'm not traditionally a cruiserweight type wrestler. Like, I was trained to be, like, a TV-style wrestler. Like, straight Memphis.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Like, so, when I got to wrestle Trent, it was a whole different story. Because they do something, like, called, like, a Philly-style wrestling, is what he calls it. And it's more of, like, a lucha libre mixed with, like, a Japanese style. So, that day, Trent Acid taught me that style of wrestling. And
wow.
Just through
before that, you weren't doing like you had a Memphis style, like you were trying to do like the old school Jerry Lawler, like we punch and bleed together type
that's
stuff.
That's how I was trained, but like I still did some flips and stuff. Like, I'm not saying I didn't do that type of thing.
Right,
I knew how to run spots to a point,
but your structure was way different than what Trent and them were presenting at the time.
Yeah, and then when Trent taught me that style, it just changed up everything. Because I was able to mix the Memphis style with the cruiserweight style and still do my own thing with it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Like my style isn't like pretty much like anybody else's.
Not at all.
When I come up with moves, I try to come up with stuff that hasn't been done before, or if it has been done, I try to add a twist to it. But, you know, that was just how it was back then.
Of those, like, because that's so interesting that you bring that up, because, like, you of the people of that time, at least it feels like, you know, I'm a promoter and a ring announcer, so I see basically everything on the independent scene as it stands right now. And it seems like there's a lot of people who are trying to emulate what you all were doing in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And for you to be like, well, we were just kind of, you know, not making it up as we went along, but there was no precedent for what you were doing, especially for the fact it was like, with you saying that you came up in Memphis with doing Memphis style, like, I just want to know, like, what led to the furthered creativity? Because you could have kept doing, like, you know, a bare bones style of injection, but you especially are an innovator. What drove you to innovate more?
Well, it just goes back to the backyard days. Like, back in the backyard days, me and Sanjay would literally send tapes back and forth trying to one-up each other on moves. So if I see Sanjay do something, then I'm like, well, I got to do it better than Sanjay. But then Sanjay would send me a tape back doing some fucking wild shit. And then that would just force me to try to come up with something else crazier. You know what I mean? And when it comes to pro wrestling, I look at it as I want to see what I want to see. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So if I want to see something crazy and nobody else is doing it, then I'm just going to have to go out there and do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't even, the whole reason I started wrestling in the first place, I'm a collegiate wrestler. Like, I wrestled in high school and shit like that. And, like, I was really, really good at it. And I remember after winning the States, I came home and WCW Saturday Night was on. And a video played. And it was a video of Too Cold Scorpio, like an intro video. And it was kids on the basketball court.
Wow.
And I don't know if you've ever seen that video before.
Yeah.
But I saw that video, and I remember playing that video back at least 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all week, I just kept watching that video on repeat because I'd never seen any shit like that. And I'm like, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I remember going in my room, taking the mattress off my bed, putting it out in my yard, and fucking up a 450 at least 450 times until I got it right. But yeah, man, when it comes to that type of shit, man, innovating new moves is what I'm all about. And I want to, I kind of think of wrestling differently. Like, I like seeing stuff kind of like a Jackie Chan movie almost. You watch a Jackie Chan movie and you're entertained by the whole situation. And then when you see this dude do something just off the wall crazy that you've never seen before, you're like, what the fuck? And that's the type of shit that I like to see. So if I'm putting a match together, I try to put a bunch of that type of stuff in there. And I try to do something innovative that you really wouldn't see in anybody else's match. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. For sure.
That's
like, I see a lot of people doing the moves that I came up with right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because, like, nowadays it feels like if you see a move on TV that an independent wrestler does, and independent wrestlers are sad, mad, and upset in the comments. How do you feel if someone does your stuff? Do you feel like you need to be paid tribute to? Do you feel like you need to be shown love? Or are you just like, is everything kind of out in the open?
That's all good. Like, there's a girl on WWE right now doing all of my stuff. And, like, from my mushroom stomp to my razzle dazzle to everything. And she's unbelievable. I can't think of her name right now. But I just saw her on Royal Rumble. And she was throwing all types of crazy shit. And I'm down with that. Like, I know how difficult it is for me to pull those moves off.
Right.
So if you can pull them off and you can do it good, you know, more power to you.
Respect. I mean, because like
cool
I said,
a shout out. But
yeah, I mean, you know, exactly. That's
it's
all
very
I'm saying.
Rare that people going to shout you out for coming up with something. You know what I mean?
In this business, that's wild that you tell that story about Too Cold Scorpio. Because like you
goat,
guys,
man.
You guys are just like so the same. It, to me, it's like it's y'all two.
It's
all of the guys. You know,
for
Too Cold Scorpio, it's the goat.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, if I may interject real quick, the way that you feel about Too Cold Scorpio is the way that black wrestlers of my generation feel about you.
That's how I felt when I saw that video that night. Like
crazy,
I felt
man,
like, oh my God, what know. Is this? This is blowing my mind. When I found your video, I watched it 1,000 times. Like, what is this guy doing? How does he do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was... Like, the crazy part about the whole thing is, like, most people don't realize when I got into business, I was, like, I think I was about 450 pounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing that type of stuff was just easy to me. Like, once I got the 450, bro, it was a done deal after that. Like, that builds your confidence up to the point that if I know I'm 450 pounds, I really shouldn't be doing a 450. Then what else can I do? And then I just kept doing it. And I didn't really think much of it. Because in my head, I'm not looking at myself as a 450-pound dude. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when people see me do the stuff in the ring, they're just like, mind blown. And I'm just like, that's not even my good stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Being able to do that stuff at 450 pounds was insane. But then when I lost a bunch of weight, for the WWE thing, it got even crazier. Like, the moves were just, like, effortless. You know what I mean?
So, I wanted to ask you, because I've heard, like, not anything negative, but I've heard that story told through other people about, I know we're skipping far ahead in your career, but
yeah,
like,
no, go
the
for
WWE,
it.
The WWE thing.
Because that intrigued me.
I've heard many people tell the story, but I've obviously now I have the opportunity to speak to you. Can you speak on that a little about what all went down as far as that
goes?
It's
not really, it's really anticlimactic. So it's not really like a really crazy story, right? So,
right.
Stevie Richards helped me get in touch with the WWE originally.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to just send tapes in, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like just send them in. And one day, I just got back from doing a tour for All Japan, and I remember coming home, and on my message machine, Tommy Dreamer was on it, and he said, I want to give you a job. So I was like, cool. So I was all pumped up about it, you know what I mean? So I called him
right.
back, we talked it over, and you know, I was told, you know, get in shape, like, get a TV-style body or whatever. So I did all that. And I dropped about 220 pounds in like 5 months and just got jacked. And I never used steroids or anything like that. So let's just get that out the way right off the bat. So I got in the shape I needed to get in and everything. But then I was told they were on a height kick. So now I'm too short and I'm too skinny. So... If I would have stayed the size that I was, it probably would have worked out different. So, it is.
Damn. Like, that's gotta, like, how did you feel now? How did you feel then? And now, is it just, like, a story for you to tell? Or is it still some sort of, like, resentment behind it? Or is it just, like, it is what it is?
I never had any resentment. Like, I was happy just to be considered. You see what I'm saying? Because back in those days, nobody was really looking at us like that. And then when they reached out and then they were cool enough, they let me come up there. It was a real cool situation. Like, it was nothing bad about it. It's just business. You know what I mean? Business is business. Like, you really can't be bitter about it. It's not like you weren't good enough to be there. It was just wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, I remember it being kind of I don't want to say a drastic change, but now you saying it being 5 months, I'm like, it was a drastic change from, like, big guy
like,
Ruckus into, like,
call,
you know what I mean?
Work, bro.
Right. Right. Did like, you, were you, so you weren't really expecting it then?
Nah. I was when I first started training, I was already told making it to WWE is slim to none. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you got to put the work in. I put the work in. They gave me a call. It just didn't work out the way I wanted it to. And with that, you know what I'm saying? You really can't be bitter about it or nothing.
For sure. It's not like you had any expectations going into it. It was like, so this was just like, you know, icing on top of the already established cake.
Oh, exactly.
So, okay. No, that makes sense. And honestly, you're a better man than me, because I would have been sitting there like, man, you told me to, I lost the weight. I did everything you told me to do.
No, man, all those dudes up at WWE were 100% class act dudes. And Tommy Dreamer, shout out to him, because he saw the talent in me, and he actually tried to give me a job, and I'm forever grateful for that. So, shout out to him and Stevie Richards for really helping me out.
That's what's up. Since we're bouncing around here a little bit, I want to talk about Urban Wrestling Federation. Something that just is, Lord, makes me so happy, and you can still watch the shows on Tubi. How did you get involved with this project? Because if people haven't seen Urban Wrestling Federation before, it's like its own little subgenre of pro wrestling where they have like cut scenes where niggas were shooting. There's blunts, Melly Mel's there, like all kinds of stuff is going on. Eddie Kingston, Homicide, Ruckus, all your favorites there. How did you get involved with this project?
Well, I'm home and I'm looking at the internet and I see an advertisement for it. So I'm like, all right, this looks fun. So I emailed the dude and literally emailed me back within an hour. Mm. And he's like, oh, I'd love to have you on. Do you know anybody else that might want to be on? So I reached out to, you know, my Blackout crew, Kingston, and he had already got Homicide and SATs and all those dudes. And we met up at a place in New York called Club Amnesia, and that's where they filmed everything. That show was fucking crazy, bro.
It's amazing. Like, you just, a wrestler will just randomly be shooting a gun. Like, it's like, this is perfect. It's like GTA pro wrestling. Dude,
when they told us we would be shooting guns and shit when we got there, we're like, what the fuck did we get ourselves into? Then Melly Mel showed up, and you're just like, what the fuck is
what's Melly Mel doing here? I want to. Melly Mel, I mean, he looked the part, though. That's probably the best part about it.
Oh, the show was fucking fun, bro.
What, did you guys just, like, film a few things and then that was it? It wasn't really anything super serious, right?
No, it was a bunch of, they were filming it for TV. Mm. So they were filming it to be, like, a TV show.
Really?
So the way they're playing it on, like, TV and stuff, or Pluto or whatever it's on, it was,
that's,
it was
the way it was supposed to be,
like, episodic, like Def Jam Fight for New York or whatever.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like each rapper had their own crew and they're fighting to see who the king of New York is. Or and like, that's... it was a cool concept, but they had some wacky ideas. Like, they were killing us off and shit. That shit was fucking crazy.
They're holding people up for money before their matches, man. That was, there's a lot of crazy stuff in that Urban Wrestling thing. What a time that was and represented. And like, you guys, if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. You became, back to CZW, you became kind of a fixture of CZW. There was like so much. When you watch a CZW show from that time, the early 2000s, it was so much variety and so many things going on. How was it kind of existing in a locker room that had guys like the SAT and Red and Messiah and Nick Mondo and all these different, Justice Payne and Nick Gage and all these different types? What was that locker room like back then?
Oh, man, locker room with the shit, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody was cool. Like, everybody just wanted to go out there and have a hot-ass match. There was no conflicts, bro. It was just a cool-ass time. Mm. It never really had any heat back there or nothing. It was just everybody cool with each other.
Really?
Is it as, because I hear people of your generation as I meet them say, like, back then it was like a slightly dysfunctional, but it was like a family. Is it, do you feel like that's true? Or were they gassing it up a little bit? It's like, no, we all came to do a job and we got along, but family's a little a little too much.
I would say it was more like a family. Like, it was just a deal. Like, I saw these dudes every week, you know what I mean? So, it was always a good time with those dudes, and you would definitely think of it as a family because you see them so often that we're going to each other's houses and all types of shit. So, yeah, it was more like a family.
I have a question for you. As as much as you are known as an innovator and as a singles competitor, you know, held basically every belt in CCW except for that that deathmatch one, to a lot of people, you are known as a tag team wrestler. And I would be remiss if I was on a podcast with you if I didn't talk about my favorite group, maybe in wrestling history, the label, not the stable, known as Blackout. Can you give me a rundown of how all that came to be, and what was some of your favorite memories of working with that group of people?
Well, it was kind of funny. Rob Zandig had fired Robbie Marino, and in real life, me and Robbie Marino are best friends. That's my dude. So, like, he fired him, and once I lost the belt to Sanjay, there was not really anything for me to do at the time because I pretty much had the same gimmick. I'm just a baby face that comes out smiling and clapping hands. Like, I never even did a promo. Like, if you ever watched any of the early stuff, you never even heard me talk.
I've noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just come out, smile, clap hands, do some crazy shit. So when it came time for me to lose the belt to Sanjay, I pitched the idea of, why don't you let me be a heel? Because I play a really good heel, because that's how I was trained. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you don't talk. And I'm like, you don't let me talk. So they were cool with it. And so they were like, all right, we'll try it out, see what happens. So I turned heel on Sanjay after he beat me for the belt. And I actually got to talk. And once I did that, the crowd ate it up. Because they never seen me, like, go off like that, like a bad guy. So once they let me start doing my heel persona, I hooked up with Robbie because he called me one day, like, bro, I got an idea. And originally the idea was supposed to be like a Bad Boy record situation where, like, I was going to be like Biggie and he was going to be like Puffy. And it was going to be like a comedy thing. And then we did this sketch. It's on YouTube. It's called Blackout Origin. And it was like the first skit we did to explain what this blackout thing was. And right now, like, people probably think it was, it probably wouldn't get over right now, but it was me turning Robbie from this corny white dude into this black dude, right? So he just started being like the white dude that acts black. And we knew that was going to get over 100% because people already didn't like Robbie as a ring announcer. But Robbie coming out acting like a tough guy, wearing all his Urban gear and shit, was going to get over 100%. And Robbie on the mic is probably the best to ever do it. Like, the dude can get heat better than anybody ever seen. So once they let me and him go out there and do that part, it started to get, I mean, it was all right. But then they were like, we want to make it bigger. So we got G's and Joker. And they're fucking great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Once we all hooked up, we were already friends before any of us were in CZW. So the chemistry was just always perfect. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And once we added them to the group and we actually found our, like, our flow with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we got the theme song right. We got the personas right. Because I never really had a gimmick until we started the Blackout.
Yeah.
And then I started just being myself. You know what I mean? And then that's when we would always come up with ways every show to try to make the crowd pop before the match even started. So that's when I started doing, we just said we're just going to be ourselves and just amplify by 100. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I was just coming to the ring smoking blunts and putting weed shit on. And I got my whole, like, ring entrance. And it is what it is from there, man. Like, that shit just blew up.
So, with all that happened with Blackout, there's a couple of key moments that stand out to me. But the biggest such one is Cage of Death 6 with Y'all versus Team Cash, which is my personal favorite Cage of Death ever. But that's not, I'm not saying that you couldn't do it, but like that sort of like specialized hardcore wrestling style isn't particularly known to be your bag. What were your thoughts going into that match? And are there any people rudimentarily call this the best ever? How do you feel about having that claim, whereas there's a bunch of different deathmatch dudes who have done Cage of Deaths that are just up there, but that's commonly referred to as the best one?
It was the best one.
I know, that's right. I'm trying to be modest on your behalf. Yeah.
Nope.
Hey, no arguments here, man. No arguments here.
I took in that match. I yep. would say it was the best ever. And mm-hmm. at that point, we had Eddie Kingston, and, you know, Eddie's the shit. So,
yep.
like, you add Eddie to the mix, and I think it was what? Me, Eddie.
You, Eddie.
Jack Evans, and.
Jeez.
And Jack Evans. That's my fucking dude. You know Ooh. What I mean? Jack Evans is my man, and Jack is bad. You know what I mean?
Jack was trying to die that day.
Like, and we were in the back, bro, and it was like, the crazy part is there wasn't a lot of planning to this thing. You know what I mean? We mm-hmm. just said we were going to go out there, and we were going to steal the show. And when you got JC Bailey and Chris Cash in the mix, like, Chris Cash is, that was like, hands down, my dude. Like, mm-hmm. we were close as hell. And we didn't give a fuck when we wrestled each other. We'll go out there and beat the shit out of each other. And Bailey was the same way. We just wanted to go out there and have the best cage match we could possibly have. And everybody in that match that night went above and beyond to, like, make this match fucking crazy. Like, Sexy Eddie, Nate Webb, like, those dudes are, like, two of the best wrestlers I've ever been in there with. And they will go out there and do the craziest shit in the world and make sure that match is, like, on point. So, yeah, that was probably one of the funnest matches I ever did. I mean, it hurt like a motherfucker. And you'll never see me do a shooting star off of that height ever again. But, like, and that was just called on the fly.
No way.
Yeah.
No fucking way.
Yeah, man. A lot of that balls on the fly. So we were just going out there, just going ham, you know what I mean?
That's so otherworldly and incredibly impressive to me. I got so many more questions for Reg. I know you got some.
No, you're good, bro. I'm loving it. You're deep in there. That's why I wanted to have you be a part of this. When you got to Blackout and you kind of like started getting more into your character, were you as, it sounds like you said that the wrestling came kind of easy. Did you kind of let the wrestling stuff take a backseat to focus more, or was wrestling still, or are you still like, I'm going to be also innovating in the ring?
Yeah, dude. Like, I never really thought about it. Like, mm-hmm. like realistically my gimmick is, you know, I'm a corner boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just like the everyday dude you see on the corner smoking weed, like, and that's not really a hard gig to do. It's just like coming up with like things that make people know that's what the gimmick is, like my right. ring entrance and stuff. Like Robbie Marino came up with pretty much all of the ring entrances you hear us do, like the Jake the Snake are getting baked and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That was just me and Robbie sitting around smoking blunts, just coming up with shit. So. that's how all that came about. The wrestling part, it just all flowed in with each other. Like, you tell me to go out there and do something, I'll just go out there and pull it off. You know what I mean? Like, I never really thought about wrestling as like anything other than just having fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I think of it any other way, then I don't want to do it.
That's important.
So, as we progress and go through, you know, the biggest highlights of your career, like mm-hmm. as someone, you know, as you, I'm trying to figure out a way to frame it. It's Black History Month, and we've been trying to figure out and get a viewpoint specifically from Black wrestlers, primarily because don't nobody give a damn 9 times out of 10 to ask us how we feel, especially not from our point of view. Right. As someone who came up in independent wrestling, and I was infancy may not be its right the right term, but definitely in its golden age, and like thrived almost incomparable to anybody else who was Black around that time. Do you feel like you had it harder than some of your other peers who weren't Black? And was there any sort of added sense of responsibility to what you were doing as a Black independent wrestler? And is that, I know it wasn't particularly trailblazing at that time, but someone who now knows that they were a trailblazer and what all that they were doing, or was it just like, as you previously said, I was just going out there and doing whatever?
Yeah, like back then it wasn't, I never really had a problem when it came to racism or anything in wrestling. Like everybody pretty much cool throughout my career. And you know, you run into like assholes here and there, or like asshole promoters or whatever, but I don't think anything ever held me back, like when it came to like race or anything. And as far as like you know, at the time, I'm living in the moment, so I didn't think, I'm looking at it as I'm just a dude out there wrestling, you know what I mean? I didn't think that, I never really thought anybody would ever even really care about what I was doing at the time. I was just getting into it because I just liked to wrestle, you know what I'm saying? And everything that came from that was just icing on the cake to me. I was happy the day I graduated wrestling school. I thought I accomplished the world at that point. So the way I looked at it is, anything that comes from this point, you know, it is what it is. I was just lucky enough to break out the way that I did.
Do you believe in being ahead of your time? Like, do you think if, say that same scenario happened with Tommy Dreamer and he told you to lose weight and you came in at that size in this climate of pro wrestling, do you think your career would have been different? Or is it because you came in at a time where nobody in the world was like you that it hit harder?
I mean, at the time, you gotta look at it. I think I had my first match in April of 1999. And at that time, you know, I was really green. That was, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, if you watch some of my matches for my first year of wrestling, it was terrible. Like, I had no time and I had nothing. So I was pretty much learning as I go. And I think WCW and ECW just shut down.
Yep.
So at the time, you know, CZW was just coming up. And Ring of Honor wasn't even a thing yet. So it really wasn't anywhere to go other than the indies. You know what I'm saying? You do the indies, you go to Japan, you do what you do. So I pretty much just did that. And, you know, I made some pretty good money doing that. And it was just a fun time. So the way I looked at it is, if somebody's going to sign me, I was up for it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, when MTV called, that was cool.
That's another place to go there. You've been a part of some really crazy, amazing, like, cult wrestling classic things. It's crazy.
And speaking of cult things, like, the funny thing that happened that I never expected to happen at all, I think it was, like, the fourth year I was in the business. I think it was about the fourth year. We got put on a video game.
I was just about to ask you about that.
I was like, that's the shit. You know what I mean? And I always wanted to be on the video. I was the shit at that point. You know, that type of shit was cool.
Oh, since you brought it up, I have to ask. Me and my friends are longtime fans of the Backyard Wrestling Games. Specifically, you being maybe the second most difficult guy to beat in the whole game. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. You and Pondo are damn near possible to be. How did that come about? And like, why in your opinion do you think you're so goddamn hard to beat?
Dude, I have no clue, bro. Like, I remember getting a call to be on the game. And once I got that call, I was just like, hell yeah, you know what I mean? And when the game actually came out, I was like, this is fucking the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life. Like, I never even thought I would even get a chance to do some shit like that. So, yeah, that was really, really a highlight right there.
And then on the flip side of it, you were on part of Wrestling Society X, which is another thing me and my friends are massive, massive fans of. Talk me through that a little bit and what all Seriously. That experience was like.
We were in Germany at the time, me and Robbie, and Teddy Hart was over there with us. Mm-hmm. And I met Teddy like early on when I did a tour of Italy, and Bret Hart was there. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got introduced to Teddy. Mm. And then we were over in Germany for a fair called German Wrestling Promotion. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Teddy was telling us that he signed his contract with MTV, and he was going to be on this wrestling show and everything. And we're like, that's crazy. And I never even heard anything of it. And he was like, oh, don't worry about it. You're on it too. Don't worry about it. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he was like, yeah, they're going to be calling you. Don't worry about it. And they definitely called me. And Kevin Kleinrock, who's probably one of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet, he hit me up and he was like, yeah, we're going to have you. And dude was like, just cool as fuck. He brought me out there, paid me well, and we had a good time filming that, man. It was probably one of the funnest fucking 3 weeks of my life. That shit was lit.
So, all the filming took place in the span of 3 weeks? I mean, I know there wasn't that many episodes. So I guess that makes sense, but that's absurd.
Yeah, man. It was a good time, dude.
It's wild that there's been so many of those little like LA projects, like which kind of morphed into what Lucha Underground became. But like they all tried to have like a little thing like that that was totally different. There's explosions, there's music, there's all kind of stuff. But Wrestling Society X is one that still kind of hung around. How did you get involved with Ring of Honor? Was it just a part of the CZW versus Ring of Honor feud?
Nah, I just finished. I think I just finished WSX. At the time. And I went on another tour of Germany, and when I came back, Gabe called me. And told me he had this stable he was about to make with
Vulture Squad.
And he said he wanted me to come up to the Hammerstein. And so I said, cool. And I remember landing and driving right to the Hammerstein, and I debuted as part of the Vulture Squad with Jack. And I came out at the Hammerstein, and they were crazy, bro. And I was like, I was shocked. I'm like, I didn't know these ROH fans would be so receptive. Mm-hmm. And they just showed me love the whole time I was there. So that was a real cool experience.
What happened to where, like, because you were there for 2-3 years. What happened to where you were just all of a sudden, it's not only like you were gone, it's like there was no writing off, there was nothing, you just gone. What happened?
Like, it started with Jack not being there anymore. Because he
was in Japan, right?
I think he was in Mexico.
Mexico.
Okay.
And I don't know what happened backstage with all that. And then it was like they started doing a transition, and they just went on a big, like, they got rid of a bunch of people.
No.
Like Gabe and like a bunch of other people. So I'm just like, wow. But it wasn't no hard feelings or nothing. It was a cool time. Like, you know, just business.
That's dope. You kind of lived your career like that, huh? Right? It's just like, it's just business, man. I'm here to have fun while I can, and it's going to be dope. I really kind of appreciate that, hearing that about your career. So, yeah, like I described coming into this podcast, you are the first ever Black CZW World Champion. Describe to me getting from delivering a ring to this company to being the world champion of the company. How did you get there?
I mean, we were just killing it at the time with the Blackout gimmick. And at that point, I was probably like I just started losing a lot of weight at that time. And at that point, I was just on top of my game. And everybody in the group was just killing it at the time. And I remember them coming up to me like the day I got to the show, and they were like, "Yeah, you're winning the belt tonight." And I was like, "Cool." Like, and I wrestled Messiah, who's another great wrestler. Like, Messiah puts it in, and we went out there just try. We killed it pretty much. And funny thing about that match, I tried a new move where I do a shooting star off the apron, and the guy rolls out the way, and then I keep backflipping into him, and he keeps rolling until finally I land on him. Now, the first time I tried this was with Messiah. And when I told him about it, he's like, "Cool." And I remember him doing a roll. And when I landed on him, he went the roll an extra time. And my knee ended up hitting him in the head. And he was like, out for the rest of the match. And the funny thing was, he kept going like it was nothing wrong. And I was shocked because I was like, it was times in there where he was out, but dude was so good that he just kept it going, bro. And he gave me a really good match that night, so I really appreciate Messiah for that.
That's crazy. Yeah. Pro wrestling is so nuts. I'm glad that we've gotten to a place where we don't have to, you know, have moments like that, because that's crazy. Yeah. Is that there's a GIF online of you hitting that spot. Is it that one? You've hit it more than that, the one.
Oh, yeah,
right?
I hit it a couple times.
Yeah. There's one that everybody kind of posts on Twitter that's of that spot that's pretty popular. So that's super interesting. I think as we come winding down, very recently you got inducted into the Independent Wrestling Hall of Fame. And as of course, everything we've kind of described here is why you've gotten there. And it was so important, I think, to that, you know, that class and what they're representing, to have you in there, especially so early for what you represented. And at the time, how was it just to kind of be, you know, given that honor?
It was great, bro. Like GCW, Britt Lauderdale, like some of the best people in the world, you know what I mean? And Britt, he's always been my dude from day one. So when he called me and told me that, I was shocked, bro. I was like, really appreciative of the honor, you know what I mean? And the way he like set that whole thing up that night, it was great, bro. Real good feeling.
I have to ask, and I don't want to feel like I'm glazing you or like going above and beyond want, just because you're here, but like, as someone who has been well established as an influence to all these other people, and as someone who now has a long-running stable who is like that has a legacy behind it, if you were to continue on majorly, because I know Blackout's not done, y'all still wrestle at ACW, I checked out the tapes, you still got, but if you were going to add more people that fit the mold of what all the Blackout represents, that same sort of vibe, that same sort of energy, is there anybody who comes to mind? And I'm not only asking this for myself, I'm asking this for a man who I consider my brother, and Calvin Tankman, who was like, man.
That's... I already gave Calvin his Blackout shirt.
Hey, he was confused. I'm the messenger. I'm the in-between.
Listen,
he was like, hey, I don't know if that meant that I'm in, or he just gave me the shirt as like an honor. It's like,
no, Calvin, Calvin was in.
Say less. Go.
We got breaking news.
Yeah, I would definitely put Calvin in all day.
Is there anybody else who comes to mind that you would, or anybody else just in general that you like enjoy their work?
I like a lot of people, dude. Like, it's hard to just name people right off the top of my head. Like, I like, you know, of course I like my boys that are already on TV right now. Like, shout out to all of them. I like the newer guys. I like Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay puts it in. My boy Joe Lando puts it in.
Shout out to Joe Lando.
I've been watching that kid since he was trying all that shit in his backyard. He's dope, bro. You know, Tony Deppen puts it in. Alex Zane. Blake Christian. Jordan Oliver. That's my dude. I love Jordan Oliver. That dude's fucking cool as shit. You know, my boy Richie. That's a lot of them, dude. Like, I don't know if you guys watch CZW or not. They got a guy named Deshaun Pratt. That's my dude.
Yep.
I don't see. I hate shouting people out because then I'm gonna miss somebody.
You feel like you're gonna miss somebody. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. My fault.
Yeah,
my fault.
There's a lot of people that are dope out there right now, and really don't want to miss anybody. So I don't know. If I remember some people, you know.
Yeah.
I'll name them later on, but
DM it to us. We'll shout them out on your behalf. Right.
There's a lot of dope people out there right now.
So what's your GCW has a 420 show coming.
I really like Dante Martin.
Dante Martin, incredible. Yeah, kind of. A lot of the people you name be doing some of your spots, which is very interesting. Like Will Ospreay does some of your spots. Oh, it's funny. with everything kind of going on, like I said, GCW has a show, a 420 show. Announced, and they have announced you. You're still active. What's your status? Are you full time wrestling right now? Are you taking select bookings? Where are you at this moment?
Well, right now I'll be doing a lot of indies coming up.
Like, oh really?
I thought of getting back in wrestling shape. So I'm ready to go back and put in some work.
So, are you ready to come to the Midwest, my dear my good sir? Because if so. We may have some business to talk
about. I'm ready to do whatever, bro. Like, right now, I say I'm probably about 50% where I want to be. I say by 420, I'll be pretty much where I want to be. But by June, I'm going to be a beast, so I'm ready to go.
Right around the time that nap is coming back, ain't it?
Noted. Just so you know, I run a promotion with Calvin Tankman out of Indianapolis, and we will definitely be in touch. Don't even worry about that.
420, I'm putting it in. So we getting it in on 420.
Man, it's like really great to hear that you're going to come back and show these youngsters what time it is. Like, this is really great news. You're gonna like. It's funny that I'm asking this, but like, are you gonna have new stuff? Like, how could you have more? Like, you could still do all the spots that you've done previously, and they're gonna look new in this day and age, which is crazy.
Yeah. Like the only spot you probably won't ever see me do again is that Stand in Phoenix Splash.
That's such a classic crazy sentence to say. It's like, yeah, I can do everything, but that, like,
dude, the difficulty level on that move is insane.
Oh, but like, it's crazy you even did it to be like 1% of people. It's like, you sounded like you regret it. It's like, man,
right?
I'm sorry, I can't do that.
I really wasn't gonna do it. Like, I did it by accident.
Accident.
We were at a show just fucking around on these like gym mats these dudes had. And I was just trying to do like a moonsault twist and land on my feet for like a counter or something.
You accidentally did a Phoenix splash.
You actually did too much.
And I did a Phoenix and I knocked the wind out of myself on this gym mat. And I was like, holy shit. And they were like, you can't do that again. So we doubled the mats up and I did it again while the mats were stacked. So I'm like, I could probably pull that in the ring. And I wasn't going to. And I wrestled, I think it was me and Jay Briscoe versus the Outlaws. And one of them was Hurricane Kid. And I remember him saying, just do it.
Just and, do it.
And I'm like, if I fuck this up, I'm going to look stupid. He's like, man, you did it 3 times. Just do it. So the first couple times I did it, it was easy. You know what I mean? But then I'm just like, I ain't going to, I don't really like putting anybody else at risk. So
the room for error is so close, yeah. Right? Yeah.
That's so crazy. Just like the fact that A, you said, oh, I did this and it was an accident. B, you said, hey, man, I could probably do that.
I could probably do it again.
I could probably do it again. But third, it's like, I don't think I can do it anymore. I'm sorry, y'all. And when 99% of people on the face of the motherfucking planet can't do it once.
There are people that can't do it off the top rope, but you can do it off the top rope and on the ground. This is like,
one small question, and this will be quick. You can answer yes or no. Debate with me, my friends. Do you think that anybody could do a 450 with enough time? Or do you think that, like, hey, so for some people, like, obviously, you know, Big Show's not doing a 450. Like, we can put that out off to the side. But do you think that anyone could do a 450 mad easy, in your opinion?
That's capable.
I mean, yeah. No. Like, here's the thing.
He said, yeah.
Here's the thing. If I'm 450 pounds at the time.
Right.
And I can figure out how to do a 450. I mean, if you put your mind to it, you can do it. Realistically, I shouldn't be able to do half the shit I can do. And I'm just being honest with you.
Like, Ruckus was 450. J-Rose, 450.
I did a...
He was the size of the name of the move.
I did a... I think the first time I tried to do a, what do you call it, Sasuke special, where you did a cartwheel and a corkscrew moonsault over the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The first time I did that, I did it in my yard over a fence.
What? And hold on. Like, stop. Pause.
That video's over online.
Yeah. I'm on it. Look continue. Up, like,
Ruckus backyard. I'm sure you'll find it.
This is.
But like,
this is incredible.
Yeah, I'm doing all the stuff in my backyard if you look up those videos. And like I said, I would just try to come up with just off-the-wall moves that you really wouldn't see. Or like innovative moves that, well, now they're known as being innovative. But at the time, I was just trying to come up with some crazy shit. You know what I mean?
I was still in all that shit in the backyard. All the moves. I was still in all the moves, not the flips in the backyard, because I couldn't do the flips. But all the power bombs and sit outs, woo, brother, I was like eating. Thanks, Ruckus. Thanks for all these moves. I got you. So appreciate that, because you had a bunch of backyard wrestling kids going absolutely insane. I was actually just talking about someone with that on how backyard wrestling is not like a thing anymore. Like, there was a time where that was, for me, it was life. And for a lot of people around the country, it was kind of the same. And that was like a form of training, even though they tried to like put this crazy tag on it, a yarder type thing. But you were kind of learning some fundamentals before you even got to the big show. And for a lot of people, it translated well. Some of the biggest stars in the industry now were backyard wrestlers, but that's just not a thing in wrestling anymore. Do you feel the kind of same way? Like, you don't see any backyard wrestling these days, do you? Do you see new backyard wrestling?
Not really. Like, right. I remember when we were doing it, it was a lot of different people doing it. It just kind of blew up. You know what I mean?
I submitted tapes to those Best of Backyard Wrestling tapes. We never got on, but I definitely submitted them. you were a part of the tapes too, right?
Yeah, I think I was on a couple of them.
Mm.
Incredible.
Wild.
I know Sanjay was on a lot of them.
Yeah, the Sanjay. I remember seeing Sanjay and Matt Cross on the original ones, and like being like, "Man, that'd be so cool to be on these." But you know, it happens how it happens. It still happened, and it's still, we still were backyard wrestling as good as we could, even without the little kind of rub. We're gonna get into a couple of super chats before we move forward. Van Twinblaze says, "Oh yeah, go ahead, J-Rose."
Well, I don't know if you're how familiar you are with these names, but we have a person in the chat goes by the name of Van Twinblade, and they love the St. Louis wrestling scene. They wanted to know your thoughts personally on a wrestlers 2T, ATM, Jabari King, and Mason St. Good. Now, outside of 2D, who is a women's wrestler, and ATM, the other two wrestlers are relatively newer. So I don't know if you know who they are, but if you know any of those individuals, let us know what you think of them, or if there's anybody that you know out here in the Midwest, St. Louis, but out here in the greater Midwest that you particularly rock with.
The wrestlers you named, I don't think I really saw their stuff yet, because I haven't really been keeping up with a lot of indie stuff.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, what's around me right now. I'm just getting back into the whole swing of things. When it comes to, like, you know, the watching shows and everything. So I only know a couple of the newer guys. So I really couldn't speak on those guys. But I will definitely check them out.
Definitely. For sure. We'll get to those names. Is there anybody else in the Midwest, St. Louis area or the Midwest that I know you say you don't keep up, but anybody at all, whether it's somebody who's been doing it forever, a new guy that comes to mind? Because there's one person who comes to mind to me that is almost a direct influence of, and that's Myron Reed.
Myron Reed, I was going to say, oh, yeah.
I like Myron Reed. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of his stuff in MLW.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's dope.
Definitely big Ruckus influence.
Yeah, I don't think I got to meet him yet, though.
Mm.
But definitely saw a lot of his
stuff.
I was going to say, yeah, I'd like to see y'all meet in the ring for sure. Somebody, yeah, please line that up.
Yeah, I just got to get back into, like, watching a lot of indies around the country. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, usually I'm just getting back to traveling again with GCW. So,
is this? Have you had any matches this year, or that's going to be the first one back?
I wrestle in Maryland mostly.
Okay.
Yeah, and I do shows other places here and there, but you know.
Maryland's your home.
Yeah.
Right.
Now that right. I'm, like, you know, motivated again.
Yes.
I'll be all over the place.
Love it.
So, like, then my last question is, this is not my last question, but I know we got to go. My last question is, who are you looking to mix it in the ring with? Or give your general statement to the greater independent wrestling world before 420 hits. Like, so then put them on notice. This is your time. This is your space. Call your shots. Say whatever you got to say. You're a very humble human being, as I've come to figure out. So you may just be like, hey, I'm just happy to be back in the ring. But if there's anything you got to say to anybody out there, I just want to give the floor to you.
I mean, it is what it is, bro. Like, anybody can pretty much get it if they want to, you know, get in there and mix it up. I know a lot of those, the AEW shit looks fun, so I'll be looking to go up there and do some shit.
You like it over there, huh? You like it now, I mean, looking over there, huh?
They got a lot of cruiserweights that I like, so.
Huh.
Interesting.
Maybe Tony Very interesting.
Maybe
hit your boy up.
I'm definitely going to say, hey, you guys, maybe, somebody wants to get back in here. These are a lot of interesting developments on this podcast. We got one more super chat before we actually get out of here. RIP to Virgil. J-Rose Camaro's going to waste Tankman during the Road Warrior Cup. Also, yeah, Danhausen versus Warhorse for the Glory Crown of Glory, and I'm going to miss it sad. Appreciate you, as always, Van Twinblade. And yes,
you're wrong.
RIP to Virgil, RIP to Mike Jones, a legendary figure in this space. So I'll get into it full and some other podcasts here. So, but yeah, appreciate you, Van Twinblade, for submitting that. So yes, Jay Rose, you got all the, I could talk for five more hours, yeah, but we're trying to just, you know, we're trying to be normal human beings here. And but you got all everything in?
More or less. I'm just, you know. While I have the space, you know, we will be messaging one way or another very, very, very soon. But
you will be seeing me on another video game this year. So,
oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh, no,
I'll be on the Wrestling Code game.
Oh, really? Wrestling Code.
Oh,
right. Mm-hmm.
And
I hope it comes this year. I've been waiting.
Yeah,
I'll be on Ultra Violent Pro Wrestling as well.
Oh yeah, I've been seeing those clips of those Ultra Violent Pro Wrestling, and that looks crazy.
Yeah, so you can look out for those.
But I just want to say thank you for all that you've done, for blazing the trail, you know, for, you know, I'm not a wrestler myself, but I know so many people who are like, damn, can we talk about Ruckus for a second? And then we go on like an hour long conversation about how dope you were and some of your best moments and how, like, everybody be ripping what you do.
I appreciate that. I'm glad you guys enjoyed the shit.
I said it before and I'll say it again. The way that you feel about Too Cold is the way that my wrestling generation feels about you. And I don't, you know, I know you recently, especially recently with the Hall of Fame and everything, you've been getting your flowers. But like, you deserve all that and more. And I know you said 420, but I hope to see you in your stomping grounds, you know, not your home, but your stomping grounds in Philly for WrestleMania weekend.
Yes.
If you're not even just there to make an appearance, maybe in a custom fuck or something, then what are we doing here?
Something.
What
you
hold the record for the most matches ever wrestled in the ECW arena, and if you're not in Philly, what are we doing here? What was the point? What was the point of even having WrestleMania in Philly if you're not gonna
be
there?
Do I really hold that record?
Yes.
That's real. That's a bar.
I swear on my life, on Wikipedia, you hold the record 149 matches. And this is, I would guess it still needs a little bit of updating, but like you have 149 matches in the ECW arena. That is the record. No one, if you really think about it, who would have more than you? Like Dreamer.
Right.
If you go throughout time,
they probably didn't even run enough to have that many shows. You know what I mean?
Right. Quackenbush, maybe. Like, but outside of like names like that, when you really think about it, it's you, man.
Because so you're not in Philly. In there for a while, yeah. You got to be in Philly.
I'll be there.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know doing what. Even if you're just showing up, dapping up. I almost cursed. Dapping people up. You know what I'm saying?
I'll be wrestling. I'll be doing everything. You'll see me on some shows up there. Trust me.
Hey, no spoiler alert. That's all I needed to hear. So I'm good. I'm good, Reg.
Wow, just a wealth of greatness. I appreciate you for coming on, Ruckus. Thanks for adding to the conversation, J. Rose. Your insight is amazing. This has been great. Ruckus is coming back on the biggest stage of independent wrestling on 420 for GCW. And we are so excited. And it sounds like there's going to be more, a lot more. So by the end of the year, we're going to be like, yeah, Ruckus came back and he destroyed it. So I'm so excited, man. Thank you again for coming. And thank you for everything you've done. Thanks for the innovation. Thanks for just being a cool ass brother. Honestly.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to pop in here as well and say thank you, Ruckus. Thank you also to all of our guests this month, Janai Kai, Brooke Valentine, Billy Dixon, Alex Kane, Stephen Wolf. Thank you, J. Rose, for stepping in, co-hosting, and taking my seat for this month. But more so, we'd like to welcome J. Rose back for any time he'd ever like to. Open door invite. So get used to seeing J. Rose around here more. He's,
If Welcome. J Rose wants to be here, he's going to be here because he's been such a delight this entire time. Such a great wealth of knowledge, like I said. So, yes, J Rose is indeed officially forever.
I'll put it in my bio. Independent wrestling is the best form of professional wrestling, and these two host the best podcast. So,
These are just all facts.
Thank you very much. have a wonderful week, everybody. Go watch Crossbody Pro Wrestling before Dynamite. Love you, everyone.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.